Adams, founder of Incandescent Public Relations, publisher of Being Incandescent Business Magazine, and your host for the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. Hi, this is Hope Gibbs with the Incandescent Radio Network. We are here in Oakland, California at the headquarters of Reading Partners, a national nonprofit organization that provides volunteer-led, one-on-one literacy tutoring to more than 5,500 elementary students in 103 schools in low-income communities across five states and the District of Columbia. It delivers a highly effective, research-validated program that has helped thousands of children master the fundamental reading skills that they need to succeed in school and beyond. So we're here today to interview CEO Michael Lombardo and learn more about this exciting initiative. So welcome to the Incandescent Radio Network.
Thank you, Hope. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you've been in charge of this organization for about 6.5 years. Tell us about Reading Partners, its history, and its mission.
Absolutely. At its core, Reading Partners is really a grassroots organization devoted to unleashing the power of community service to support student reading. The organization began as a collaboration between the Ravenswood City School District in East Palo Alto, California, the School of Education at Stanford University, and interested community members, volunteers themselves who founded the program in 2001. Over the years, we've codified the program. We've added structures, an emphasis on data and accountability. We've integrated technology and student data management, but the core of what we are, the notion of community members rallying behind struggling public schools and using the tremendous human capital asset that is community service to help schools achieve their goals, really remains the same today as it was, 12 years ago when we were started.
Very cool. So how exactly does the program work?
Yeah, it's beautifully simple. Volunteers work one-on-one with kids, tutoring them in essential reading skills, both during the school day and after school. All the programming takes place in school buildings and in a dedicated classroom space that we occupy. We have a full-time staff person in the school who's there to support the volunteers, train them, coach them, make sure that the kids are where the kids need to be, the volunteers are where the volunteers need to be, to act as the liaison between what we're doing and the school staff so that we're really highly integrated with the overall instructional approach of the school and really doing everything we can to differentiate the work that we're doing to meet individual student needs. And at its heart, I think that is what really sets Reading Partners apart. The notion of volunteers reading to kids is nothing new. It's been around for a very long time. But I like to make the analogy that, the traditional notion of a volunteer reading with a kid at lunch is sort of the horse and buggy, and what we do is the automobile, and is a really much more technologically sophisticated and much more powerful tool that builds on the great tradition of community volunteerism and takes it to the next level in a way that really generates amazing results for kids.
So let's talk about the issue. Why do so many elementary school kids graduate from elementary school not knowing how to read?
Yeah, the statistics are sobering. Depending on which set of data you look like, the overwhelming majority of both of all students, but especially low-income students, are struggling with reading. If you look at the National Assessment of Educational Progress, which is done by the U.S. Department of Education every other year, and is the sort of one apples-to-apples comparison to get across the country, 90% of low-income students in fourth grade aren't reading at their ready level. So it's a huge problem. It's not one thing that is the issue. It's a succession of things. Like many complex operations, Reading Partners included, it takes many, many things going right for it to be successful. And so for a student reading, they need to be exposed to literacy at an early age. That needs to be reinforced for them throughout the first 5 years of their life. One of the statistics that sort of illustrates the magnitude of the issue that we're dealing with is that the average student coming from a middle or upper income family on their first day of kindergarten has had about 2,200 hours of parent reading time. The average student coming from a low income family has had 60. And so even on that very first day of kindergarten, there's a divergence in terms of the overall reading experience students have had. Going forward from there, the biggest challenge is that students have very different needs in reading, and those needs diverge more and more over time. So if I am a fourth grade teacher in a Title I school, I have a cluster of kids who are reading at about a fourth grade level, a cluster reading at about a third grade level, a cluster reading at about a second grade level, and a cluster reading at about a first grade level. And as a teacher, I have to sort of aim for the middle as best I can and try to help those kids. But the reality is what those kids at the first and second and third grade level need is what educators call differentiated instruction. They need to be taught at their level, not at the sort of classroom level. And teachers instinctively know that, that you know, when you ask educators, they'll tell you that for a kid struggling with reading, the most effective thing by far is for them to get one-on-one support. The challenge is that it's just incredibly expensive to provide. No school can afford to provide tutors for all those kids, and there's not enough hours in the day for the teacher to do it. And so I think the issue compounds over time as students diverge further and further, and the kids who need the most help, you know, fall further and further behind the rest of the pack. There's a concept that we talk a lot about in education called the Peter Principle, which is, you know, sort of the rich get richer, the poor get poorer. And in reading, that bears out through national research that once students fall behind in reading, they fall behind at an accelerating pace over time. So it gets worse and worse and worse as time goes by.
It's terrible to hear that. And you guys are part of the solution. How exactly do you feel like one-on-one, I mean, 5,500 kids isn't bad, but that's in a bunch of states. So what is your goal for the future and how are you trying to solve this problem?
Yeah, like I said, you know, the vast majority of low-income students, 90% of them in fourth grade aren't where they need to be with reading. By the numbers, that works out to, you know, to almost 10 million children nationwide. So it is a huge problem, and while 5,500 kids is great, you know, we are a fraction of a percent of the solution. You know, I think the biggest thing, first and foremost, is to identify interventions and programs that are successful. So Reading Partners, you know, the average student is referred into our program gaining 0.6 months of reading skills for the month that goes by in school. So as I mentioned before, falling behind a little bit more every month. While they're enrolled in the program, they gain 1.6 months of reading skills. So they go from falling behind a little bit every month to catching up. And the pace at which they're learning reading almost triples. And so I think the challenge for us is both to scale that up from the 5,500 kids we work with today. You know, right now we're targeting getting to 25,000 students a year by 2017, which is pretty ambitious growth, but still, compared to that 10 million figure, not nearly big enough. And so really, we're, as an organization, beginning to focus on how we can become sort of a knowledge manager and share what we have learned are the effective practices. As I mentioned, you know, there are volunteers reading with kids in schools all over the country, many more than are in our program. And so we're focused on how we can support other organizations in taking sort of the best practices that we've found to be effective in moving student reading skills, as well as working with policymakers at both the state and the federal level, and sometimes at the city level, to create an environment in which this kind of evidence-based, highly structured, outcomes-focused tutoring is what's happening in schools, and that, you know, that we're really recognizing the power of community service and what it can do for schools, and then harnessing it to solve this tremendous problem that is the fourth grade reading achievement gap.
So I want to talk about the policy in a minute, but tell us exactly what some of your techniques are. Maybe it's something that parents can also pick up on.
Yeah, it's you know, I have three kids myself, and sometimes I find myself doing Reading Partners with them, and they, I think, appreciate and don't appreciate that in some ways. You know, I think the first and biggest precept that is the foundation of Reading Partners is what I mentioned earlier, which is differentiation, which means teaching the child at their independent learning level. And they might be, by age, a third grader, but if they have not mastered second grade reading skills, you need to go back and work with them on second grade reading skills. And there are a number of resources online that are available for parents if you're interested in trying to assess where your student is in reading. I should say your child, not your student, but... And I think it's really important that that you sort of engage with the child at that level. There's actually a simple test you can do even just at home, which we call the five finger rule. So pick a book that you want to read with your child, and have them read to you. And every time they encounter a word that they don't know or can't decode, have them put one finger up. And if they have zero fingers at the end of the page, that book is too easy for them. If they have five fingers or four fingers up at the end of the page, it's too hard for them. Two or three fingers is just right. And so, you know, you're really aiming for a book that is a little bit of a stretch, that's going to help improve their vocabulary and expose them to new things, but that isn't so hard that they're going to become discouraged or have a hard time getting through it. I think the second piece for us that's really important is structure. And that means, as I mentioned before, not just having a volunteer reading with the student, but actually working with them on a specific reading skill, having an agenda and saying, today we're doing the long A sound. And you know, we've developed a curriculum that sort of walks you through how to help students work on the long A sound and have workbooks and all that kind of stuff. And so I think for people at home as well as other volunteer programs, you know, it's important to have a set of objectives that you're trying to accomplish when you're working with a student, and to make those objectives explicit, and to, in a way that is as structured as possible, drive towards those. And then I think the sort of third and final piece is really to, you know, engage in higher level thinking about reading at all times. Even when you're reading with a kindergartner who is just doing those very simple kind of cardboard books, you know, be asking them questions about what they're reading, about what is happening in the book. You know, ask them predictive questions. What do you think is going to happen next? Why do you think the character did that? And, you know, by building those kinds of questions into the reading process at a very early age, you're really encouraging students to develop those higher level comprehension skills that are so important later on. You know, it's one of the most important domains of reading that we focus on is comprehension and helping kids not just be able to sound out the words, but understand what they've read. So really, you know, just every couple pages, make sure you ask a question. And try to ask an open-ended question, not like, do you like apples too? But, you know, why do you think they like apples so much? And that kind of sort of question asking can really help kids a lot.
So reading comprehension is obviously critical, not just knowing, mastering how to read, but comprehending it, which is critical, leads to critical thinking skills. So talk a little bit about the evolution of the importance of reading and why it's so fundamental, clearly, at such an early age, and then how it plays out.
Yeah, absolutely. The I think if you got 100 educational researchers in a room and asked them, you know, if you could change one statistic about the first 5 years of school for a child, you know, 90 of them would say having them master reading by the end of fourth grade. And there's a saying among teachers that up until fourth grade, you're learning to read, and after that, you're reading to learn. So if you don't kind of get that bedrock reading skill, it's going to be a disadvantage for you for, you know, the rest of your academic career. You know, there's research in cognitive science that shows that the parts of the brain that activate during reading are deeply tied to the overall cognitive process. So actually the way you think about the world is affected by your reading ability. And so there's really almost nothing more fundamental to the whole process of learning than reading. And comprehension, as I mentioned, is you know, in some ways the hardest reading skill to master, but is also the most important. And it has to do with your ability to understand, you know, at a high level sort of what you're reading in front of you, and to, as I mentioned before, be able to make predictions about it, be able to analyze it, you know, so to do comparing and contrasting exercises, to be able to categorize the elements of the story. You know, here are who the characters are, here are the settings of the story. And those kind of cognitive functions are things that kids will use in social studies, they'll use it in math, they'll use it in science. I mean, it's a set of analytic tools that have, you know, tremendous use across the spectrum of academic subjects. So like I said, I think we focus on reading as an organization and early reading as an organization because there's tremendous correlation between improvement in reading skills and improvement in all the other school subjects. And you know, when you kind of turn the math dial up, you know, the other needles don't move. The math needle moves, but that's all that moves. When you turn the reading dial up, all the needles move. And so that's how we put our energy there.
Fun. And I read a statistic once or saw a chart about how the more vocabulary words that you know, the more neural pathways that are beat to your brain. Do you know about that research?
Yeah, there's a lot of very interesting research on both vocabulary and cognitive development, as well as exposure to different kinds of verbal experiences. And there's a sort of landmark book called Meaningful Differences that I highly recommend that followed a group of kids and families for the first 3 years of their lives and documented not just the vocabulary, but also the types of verbal interactions they were having, whether they were interrogative or declarative, so whether the parents were asking the kids questions versus making statements to them, the tone and tenor of the conversation. And what they found, maybe not surprisingly, was that students from middle and upper income families were exposed to literally millions more words and vocabulary over the first 3 years of their lives, had much more interrogative interaction, much more positive, inflected interaction. And so, as I was saying earlier, you know, when you think about the roots of this problem, it's happening at a very early, early age. And kids who come from these low-income households, you know, have loving parents who are doing everything they can for them. But in many cases, especially here in California, either aren't don't speak English themselves or aren't literate in English. And so, you know, this deficit begins to emerge very early on. And schools have to have solutions for those kids to be able to help them be successful.
And since you're in so many different cities around the country, how are you noticing some differences in regions? Is one city particularly strong or weak? Is it, or is there universal problems that you're picking up on?
I'm sad to say it is a universal issue, and it was something that, as we began expanding out of our founding region in the San Francisco Bay Area, it was interesting to discover that in other cities and other parts of the country, they have different sort of name for it, or different vocabulary they use to describe it, but everyone is dealing with the same problem. Some states or cities, I think, do have their arms around it more. A lot of times, that's a function just of demographics, of sort of what the population looks like in that city. But really, there's nobody who you can point to and say, like, that, you know, that town has got 100% of their kids reading at grade level. And as I mentioned before, I mentioned the statistic earlier of the low-income students who aren't reading at their grade level, but if you look nationally at all students, 2 out of 3, 67% of fourth graders across the country aren't reading at their grade level. So it's a huge issue. And I think nobody has really fully cracked that nut yet. And as I mentioned before, I think the problem is that the kinds of solutions that are the most effective for kids, these highly differentiated one-on-one approaches, are just too expensive for schools to do. And it's sort of an impossible task. Even if you are the world's greatest teacher, if you've got 30 kids all at different levels of need and reading ability, supporting all those kids equally is just not possible. And so I think we have to be thinking as educators about what we can do to supplement instruction and how we can support those teachers by providing other kinds of supports for kids in reading.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Let's talk about the policy. And in your 2012 annual report, you said that things are looking up. You explained that in 2011-12, 13 states around the country passed legislation aimed at improving reading for third graders. Through the Annie E. Casey Campaign for Grade Reading and the All-American Cities Award, 124 mayors from cities large and small developed plans to improve reading for kids. So is the momentum building?
Absolutely. It's a very exciting time. And I think we've seen tremendous leadership from the foundation and sort of philanthropic space. I would love to also mention the Target Corporation, which if you're like me and have kids, you give them a lot of your paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And Target has been a tremendous leader on this and has committed to literally hundreds of millions of dollars in funding nationwide to address this problem. We've also seen a lot of momentum at the city level, which we mentioned, as well as at the state level. I think policymakers realize what a problem this is. I think there is hunger for a solution and a willingness to invest in solutions that are effective. And so I think, and it's daunting sometimes to think about the 10 million kids out there who need help and to look at my little 5,000 and think, that there's a long way to go, but I think the wind is at our back. That there are a lot of people who are really aligning around this, and that we have an opportunity before us as a country to really make progress on this problem. And I am optimistic about our ability to do that, not just for thousands of kids or tens of thousands of kids, but for millions of kids.
That's excellent. Yes, and so before we get to how we can volunteer, because you've gotten us all revved up, tell us a little bit about your background.
So I began my career in higher education. I worked for the University of California, Berkeley, and was a part of the scholarships apparatus there and was about trying to help create economic opportunity for kids so they could afford a college education. And after 5 years working in that space, it became increasingly clear to me that I was on the receiving end of a broken system. And And I had an epiphany one day after 5 years working at Berkeley that if you manage to make it through high school as a very low-income kid, a kid from East Oakland or the South Bronx, if you manage to make it through high school and have the grades and test scores to get into Berkeley, at which point you would appear on my desk, you had already beaten the odds. You've won. You might end up going to UCLA instead. You might end up going to, you know, Harvard instead. But you're going to be okay. And really the problem is the kids, the vast majority of kids in those high poverty schools who don't make it that far. And so the dean of the School of Education at Berkeley at the time happened to be an expert in early reading. And, you know, and I talked with him about why it was that there weren't more kids who were appearing on my desk who were coming out of these very high poverty schools ready to go to a college like the University of California. He showed me the data that said that you can predict with 70% accuracy whether a kid will complete high school based on their third grade reading scores, but that very, very early on, kids get set on the path. And so, you know, I was really motivated by that, and I sort of chucked my cushy CalPERS retirement and left the department that I was running and joined Reading Partners, which at the time had 6 employees. Everyone thought I had lost my mind, and it was, you know, after marrying my wife, it was the best decision I've ever made. And, you know, we've grown that team of 6 employees to almost 300 today, from working with just a handful of schools in Silicon Valley to working with, as you mentioned at the top, over 100 schools across 40 school districts in 6 states. And I think it's been just the most rewarding and exciting experience of my life. And I think, you know, while there is tremendous opportunity ahead of us, I'm also really proud of what the Reading Partners team has accomplished, and I feel privileged to have been a part of that.
Well, we're glad that you, all your students are very glad that you made that choice. So tell us, how can we volunteer?
It's very easy. Go to readingpartners.org, and you'll see a big volunteer button, and that will guide you through the different geographies where you can volunteer. As you mentioned, we're all over the country, and so you know, most of your listeners will have a Reading Partners Center not far from them. If you aren't able to volunteer, you can also donate to the organization and support us in geographies where we have volunteer services, or if you're just too busy, some people you know, can't make it down to the school. But I think really, at the end of the day, you know, there's a role for everybody to be a part of solving this problem. And you know, if you hear these statistics, if you hear that you know 2 out of 3 fourth graders in the United States can't read at their grade level, and you want to do something about it, everybody can be a part of the solution. Go to readingpartners.org and you will find, unsurprisingly, that our website proposes many ways in which you could be a part of the solution. And I think, you know, what I want people to hear is that there are solutions that work, and that we don't have to feel a sense of despair when we look at these numbers, and that by coming together as a community and by supporting public schools, we can do tremendous things for kids. So, as I said before, I'm very hopeful and I believe that we can solve this problem as a country.
Well, having met you, I am sure that you are going to be part of the solution. Readingpartners.org is where you need to go to check out this amazing group of people where you can go and help all these kids learn the very fundamental skill of reading. This is the Incandescent Network. I'm Hope Gibbs, and we look forward to talking to you soon. So that's it for today's Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, where we always ask, what's your story? If you have a good one and would like to be interviewed on the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, send me an email to hope@hopegibbs.com. Check back every Monday at noon for a new episode of the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, www.incandescentradio.com. We look forward to talking to you next week. Here's to your incredible, indelible success.